Welcome back, everyone. It's Sales Squad time. Alex, Lowe, Simon Severino here for you to help you take one big decision every week. This week, we want to help you decide, should you live on one single income stream or should you diversify into multiple income streams? And can some of those be on repeat or even passive? Is there such a thing as a real passive income? All these things we're going to cover because in 30 minutes, you should be equipped to take your best decision. We'll start in a second with the question, because the reason this is relevant and the reason we picked this, we are sales coaches. We're getting your sales recordings every day. We get 3-4 per day. And what we are seeing is buyers that are cautious. Deals where people think, oh yeah, this deal is going to expand. And it's delayed. We are seeing cautious buyers. We are seeing uncertain pipelines. And so if you want to be ready for all weathers, for the sunny weathers, but also for the stormy periods, then it's one option to diversify into multiple income streams. Things like retainers, subscriptions, capital gains, affiliate sales, referral fees, rental incomes, dividend income, staking income, royalties, licenses. We're going to dive into all of this. So make sure you have your drink in front of you and the next 25 minutes, your attention is here because this can change your revenue situation. So let's kick it off. Alex.
Hey, well, I was thinking about this, and now obviously it seems at first like multiple streams of income is the way to go, but obviously like I'm on the side of the single stream of income, and I do think there's some compelling points for it, because one of the things that I see that holds back many people in business is overwhelm and complexity. It's that thing of, you know, complexity fails, simple scales. And so if you do have one stream of income, one product, one service that you push, you generally, you can make it very simple. You can target it directly to a consumer market that wants it. You can really hone your sales and marketing and operations. There's simplicity in the management. You can get a much deeper understanding of the target market than maybe you can if you have a spread of different products or different streams of income going on. And basically, it's the way of a mastery. Right, it's the way of, like, you know, you master something when you do one thing 10,000 times. And so if you do focus on a single stream of income, your chance of hitting the bullseye, your chance of getting something that works and sort of mining it for all it's worth is greatly increased. Also for all of us, like, we've only got so many resources, right? Time, energy, money, there's limited resources. And so what are we going to put it towards? Now you could say, well, try a little bit across a load of different streams of income and see which ones hit. And yes, that can be effective, but there's also something to be saying for really focusing on identifying and driving a primary income source, a single sole one that actually works. Because like your ability to focus on your strengths and your dream and like what you're good at and what you want to do. If we think of companies, even companies that have maybe a wide range of products now or have done stuff, they've usually focused on a single product or a single source of income to start with. Like, I mean, Apple, before they became innovative all over the shop, they were just like, no, we're just doing this iPod. We're doing one thing exceedingly, exceedingly well so that we dominate the market and so that we master it. Rolex, wristwatches, you know, they start off with just one or two, like, we're just going to master this particular product in this particular market. We're going to become known for it. We're going to become the go-to people. Nobody are going to touch us. So there is something to say for sort of taking a, and I know this is kind of in the product stream as opposed to income, but they are kind of similar, choosing one source that you can master and go really deep on. And your chance of success and your chance of stability can be greatly improved. Now, obviously, there's risk management with single source. You know, the market fluctuations, innovative fluctuations, that could affect it. It's very dangerous in business to have one of anything, like, well, one product, one main supplier, one main superstar employee. There's always a danger to that. But then, hey, I mean, business is a game of risk, right? And it's like you've kind of got to weigh the odds and take a gamble.
Where
and
does
also
the
just
complexity come from? I agree with you. The single risk in the first years of any business is complexity.
Yeah.
Where does complexity come from? I guess there is one part that never changes. That is, who are you here to serve and what do you solve for them? That very specific part, the ICP, the anti-ICP, and your core job to be done, that probably you will have that on single mode forever, like for the next 15 years, and never add complexity there. I can imagine then when you have nailed that, and let's say you start with a service offer on that, and then you might code something that becomes a software on that, and then you can license the IP on that, but you're always keeping it simple, who you're here to serve and what does it solve for them. But you can stack then different solutions and formats on top of that, always for that one topic, so that it doesn't become actually more work for you. It doesn't create complexity. It only creates a stack of offers, and it creates depth, but not complexity.
Yeah, there's definitely something there. I think there's, if we talk about like a value ladder or a product, a range of products, for example, like a lot of times in the best companies, they only really have one target market and one transformation or one main benefit they deliver. They just have a range of ways of doing it. So if I speak to coaches and consultants and they start creating multiple different products or service offerings, I'm like, just generally you have one main transformation and you might have three ways of delivering it. You know, do it yourself, done with you, done for you. You might have three different ways, but it's generally the same product, just in different operations. Whereas when people actually start to create different products, different services, that's often where they get overwhelmed and the complexity comes in. And as you said there, it's often finding stability, finding a single source to stand on to go further. When you start to look to scale and go, can we create new product lines? Can we open up in new geographical areas? Can we do this? Can we do that? Fantastic, but we've got a solid foundation to start off with. So I guess it's time is the variable, isn't it, as well? When do we want to add complexity, or when do we want to move from single to multiple? That's always going to be the main question, I think.
Yeah, double clicking into your example, if that is a consultant, an advisor, let's say they're a financial advisor. Now, at the beginning, they might be just a service, right? They do stuff. That's the service. Then they can scale it as a group offering. But it's still the same thing. There's just adding people, right? So it's not more complexity. Then, after 2 years of running that group, they have enough content for a book. Now it's the book with the content of what they have experienced working in that group. Now the book can be a method. You can register the IP. Now you can start lending the IP, either a train the trainer, or enterprises pay for your IP so that they can use that to train internally. You are just selling seats. You are still running your group, but now there is an additional revenue stream now, which is IP lending, which is some enterprises are using your intellectual property now without you doing anything, and they pay you per month $1,000. So you have five of those enterprises, you have 5,000 on top, you are still running your group. And then a year later, that group might become a software that your people use. And so in this way, you might scale services and scaling IP without adding complexity to your life.
Yeah, it's also a case of asking what the driver of the revenue is, isn't it? Because it's often like, I'm thinking, for example, of a supplement company I worked with. They started off with one key market, one key supplement stack that built their business mostly on e-com. Then they started to bring in other stuff as well. But the main driver of their revenue was their community. When you think about what they did, they weren't necessarily supplement sellers, they were community builders. And it was the community that told them what to sell next. So they were building the community. So if you 80-20, like what are the actual activities that are driving their revenue? It's building the community. The community then tells them what to sell next, because obviously they do polls and surveys. So then they're not taking a guess as much. But if you're looking at single stream of income as opposed to products, you could say what's the main kind of activity? And in that business, as in so many, it was if you build the community, put all the focus onto that, they will in a sense tell you what to sell them. And so many big companies, that's what they do, isn't it? Like Apple built raving fan base through their Think Differently campaigns and all of that. They built a tribe of fans. The tribe of fans will then kind of enable them to test or drive any kind of product or service or whatever they do. So it is that single focus, but it does switch us into if you build a community, that's the hub of multiple streams of income if it's a product or service business, right? Because it's like that way you can bring out or test anything. So there's definitely ways to go either way. I mean, what would you say the biggest arguments for multiple streams of income are? Like for most of the people watching this, what let's say they have one stream of income. What would be your argument for getting them to focus on more?
Well, the pros of having one stream is really focus, the clarity, and the positioning. And so stay there as long as you can. And when that is dialed in and it's creating whatever it is, half a million, a million per year for you, now you can start stacking things upon it. Because now the moment is ripe for you to write down how things is done and to pull yourself out of operations. So what we would do is start writing down, okay, how do you do the marketing processes? How do you do the sales? How do you do the operations, the client delivery? And now starting pulling yourself out of it, because now it's not you anymore, it's not dependent on you, it's more than that. So you pull yourself out, and with that time, let's say you fire yourself from operations, now you have 40 hours per week available. These 40 hours, I know from my own experience, you will fill them with something, because entrepreneurs, they love the game of building, of doing, of winning. We don't just go on Bora Bora and stay there for 6 months on the beach. We are not built for that. So after 2 weeks of beach, you go, okay, what can I build now? And this is when you can start stacking the next one thing. So from my experience, after adding retainers and subscriptions, which I think for most listeners is a very interesting thing to consider, it relaxes your sales cycle if you don't have to hunt every month from zero. That's maximum amount of stress. If you have some recurring revenue already, so how can you put revenues to repeat revenues to recurring revenues? That's, I think, the step two to do. Some of that, make it a subscription. Can it be a community? Can it be something long term? Then, and so, they came for a solution, but they might stay for the community. Then the next thing is, so you can put your clients together if they have value of exchanging each other and connecting to each other and sharing the journey. And then you can get paid for that. That's a subscription service on top of your services. And then I would really recommend everybody to have some rental income on the side, because if you are 10 years in the business, then you know that there will be some months where it's tough and you might have, for whatever reason, recessions, a tax situation, a legal situation, a competitive situation. In some months, you might need to put some capital from your personal wealth into your business. It's temporary, but it's much more relaxed if you have also some capital gains, some rental income, some dividends income going on. This is why right now I'm teaching that in the 200K Club. How to add dividends income, staking income, rental income, royalties, licenses on top of what they're doing, so that it makes you more resilient for all the weathers that can come up. The US was just in a very bad weather condition. Europe is entering the storm, as it seems. And this will happen every 5 to 12 years. Then adding affiliate sales, adding referral fees. So I send someone a client and I get 15% from that, or somebody sends me a client and gets 15% from that. So average fees are between 10 and 20% in our community. So that creates another 15% without adding complexity. You are talking to people anyways, but they might not be the right people for you. So you send them to strategic partners. And so you collect, you build an ecosystem of 5 to 10 partners that you really trust and that you refer to, and they refer to you. You've created an additional income stream. There is a big difference between rental income and rental management. So, and is real estate your asset or your liability? If you live in there, it's a liability. It's not an asset.
Right.
So the question is, the pipe breaks, who are they calling? If they called you, you are a manager. You have a job. You don't have an asset. And it's a terrible job. And if they call somebody else, now you have an asset. So if you go for rental income, make sure you have asset managers running that, and they get called on a Sunday when the pipe breaks. You don't.
No, it seems to me like when we're talking about the stretch of business, because the way I've seen it go, if we look at business as essentially asset accumulation, like if you think about business, like you have obviously sales, marketing, ops, talent, and cash, basically. And like if people build up, as we were talking before, like a community, a tribe of buyers or a tribe of people who are kind of loyal to them and like them, and then they build up a team to sort of run things more, to free up their time and the ops thing. So build up the community, build up the team, build up your cash flow, obviously your savings, your actual money. And when you build those, you can then be looking at, okay, great, where do I invest? I've got a community that I can monetize. I've got a team to free up my time and still keep operations deliverable. I've got cash flow, including excess cash flow for volatile conditions. And then when you start looking, so those I'd call like your base assets to build up. Then when you've got that surplus cash, you're looking to either like pay down debts or put into the business or invest. And you're then looking at like, okay, how many different options can I put out there? And as you said, it's largely about stability and weathering all conditions. But obviously I look at it in the business journey of building assets, and like initially, like that team and that community, every business that I see really scale or take off has put the time into building those things. Because it's like that culture eats strategy for breakfast from Peter Drucker. Like if you have a good team, if you build that asset and you build the community, you can pivot your product or service if you need to. And you can keep that kind of, and as you said before, if you've got the cash flow surpluses, you can weather any storm. And then when you're looking to invest into further assets like retail or stocks or other acquiring other companies or whatever asset class you go for, you've got that position. So I tend to think of all businesses like, what's the asset you're building right now? Like even if you're starting, like what's the asset that you're building? Is it the intellectual property of what you're doing? Is it the email list? Is it the, like what's the current asset you're building and what's the asset you're going to build next? So for some people, they might have built like a sales and marketing asset, but they haven't built the team yet. Or they built the team, but they haven't properly built the cash flow systems because they're leaking cash all over the shop. When you get those things done, then as you said, it's like you can build out. So it's just part of the journey, is that you never stop this journey. You just go from one asset to another. And that's really where the fun starts.
Yes. And I'm with you. If you don't have an email list, start there. And that takes time. So you can build an email list in a few months. That will take a couple years. So those things are done in parallel. Like also your IP is that takes time. You will do it first as a service, then you will write it down, then it might be a book, then a method, then a series of courses, and then when you really secure the copyrights and the intellectual property to that, now you get into the next leg up, which is IP lending, IP licensing, certifying, franchising, and that is the whole arc of brand building that takes longer time. So you give yourself for that 10 years, 12 years if you go for that, and You can divide it into milestones, like, okay, now 6 months focus list building. List goes well together with social media building. Pick one or two, like LinkedIn or YouTube, and you really build that and the list together. That might be something to do for 6 months. Then you have done that, then you can focus on hiring. Hiring sounds easy, but during the intense hiring phases, that might be feel like a full-time job. Like, we are super streamlined and organized and have checklists for everything, and we have Michelle and Lou and people helping, but it's still some weeks I feel like I'm just a full-time hiring role. So don't underestimate that. That might be also something where you put a focus on and say, okay, for the next 3 months, hiring is the focus, building that team. And then when you have the team, you have to focus on culture, like the meeting. How do the meeting start? How do you talk about progress? And how do you coach each other and supervise each other? How do you report and improve processes? It's not just doing the work. It also, how do you improve the work? And what culture are you building by doing that?
That's the thing a lot of people don't think of, is it's always trying to think one step ahead, because you've got to think, well, when I implement this bit, what's going to happen then, and am I prepared for it? So as you said, like, when you hire somebody, particularly a first-time hire, you're going to have to train them, or you're going to have to get them to do something. Do you know what that is? Do you have the SOPs or the plans written out? If not, get that done before you hire. Otherwise, if you're time poor now, you're going to be even more time poor. And then, as you said, when you get a member of staff on board, or maybe a couple, you've then got to think about culture and operations. And so do you have that there? So you've always got to be thinking, what's the next thing when I've got this thing in place? So like as you said before, when you've got investments in place, well, as you said, if you've got rental property, unless you hire a management company, you're suddenly going to be doing stuff. So you've got to think, when I've got this asset, what's the next step? What do I have to have in place to have it? So it's always kind of knowing or having an idea. This is why things like the 200K community or being around people who've already kind of at different stages of the journey, because then you can see, oh, when I get to this stage of the journey, this is what I need to set up. I need to know these people. I need to have these resources. And of course, you can't know that unless you know people who are on that next step, because otherwise you'll hire or you'll invest in an asset or you'll roll out a thing, and then you'll suddenly realize, oh, I've created a million more problems for myself because I didn't know what had happened on the other side of this. But, you know, it's all a part of the journey. And that goes for the power of community, doesn't it? Like, there are people ahead of you who've already made the mistakes. They've already paid the sweat equity. And if you can learn from them, you can at least hurdle some of the common challenges. And then you can pass it on to people behind you and kind of go, watch out. You know, this is the way, this is the road up the mountain. So that's another asset, isn't it? A community. It's an intangible one, but it's a very important. Any entrepreneur I know who succeeded, they've always had some type of community or coaching, or they've always had those connections. They've always built up that network, because that's a very important asset in and of itself.
Totally. And so for me, the main emotional point of having multiple revenue streams versus a single revenue stream is I would obsess on never changing who you are here to serve and what you solve for them. Never change that. In 20 years, I've never changed that. But stacking multiple income streams has saved me a couple times. So I'm 22 years in business. So I have experienced two recessions so far. Some listeners might just have experienced one or even less than that. So when you see that, and specifically the recent one where the supply chains were suddenly interrupted, and nobody saw that coming, and nobody could do anything. So there are still consequences of that going on right now. So how can you prepare for that? You can't. The only thing you can do is creating multiple income streams. So if one breaks, you know, you surf you still are surfing a wave. Make sure that there are always waves to surf. Because yes, it's temporary. You might have to use those income streams maybe only for a month, maybe for 6 months, maybe for 12 months. but it relaxes you so much for this incoming and unpredictabilities, but also just for the normal sales conversation. Let's say you are in a demo and it's about a $60,000 deal. If that makes 80% of your annual income, you are too nervous. It's not a great situation to be in. It's too intense. It's too risky for you. It has too big of a consequence. But let's say, okay, it's still 80% of your recurring revenues, but on top of that, you have some rental income and some dividends income, staking income. Then you are much more present in that conversation from the open, curious place, not from I have to win this. And it's really important in sales to be open and curious and to be in a position where you can pick and choose the client. Because if you cannot, they know exactly what's going on and they will either not work with you because it feels desperate, or they will play around with you. They can push you around and they can, you know, start destroying your prices and your conditions. Yeah. They will dictate the terms of work. And you don't want to have clients that dictate your terms of work, because now you are in a continuously stressful situation. Yeah. So for that alone, just for your normal sales calls to be more relaxed and you to be more curious and open and be able to pick your clients, just for that alone. And then from times to times, there are these global events that will surprise you. But just for a normal business situation, it's really so much more relaxing. Like, when was it? During the pandemic, right, we had a ton of live events scheduled and they were gone. From one moment to the other, they were canceled. Now, I would have panicked if, you know, I have three kids, so I cannot say, hey guys, there is no groceries this week, right? You don't want to be in that situation. So for that temporary situation, we took it from the capital gains. And we took it from the rental income. And that helped us. It's a very different situation that if you just have that one stream and now it's gone.
Yeah, I think you've always got to ask yourself, people always like to assume nothing's going to go wrong and everything's going to stay the same as it is. But you've always got to have that idea of like things come in cycles and there's always going to be dips and ups and downs. And so it's not a question of, you know, if, it's a question of when. And so, as you say, like, you've got to forecast ahead and go, when something happens, like, what am I putting in place? Like, what are the action? How are the actions I'm taking today impacting future me 5 years, 10 years down the line? Am I paying myself today because I want this thing, or am I paying future me 5 or 10 years time? Am I giving them a payment? And so the investing decisions you make today, as you said, they're impacting you directly down the line, you and your family. And so it's a slightly different, when you open up the information by asking those better quality questions, you know, what are the actions I'm taking today? Same as prospecting, right? What are the actions I'm taking today to fuel the funnel in 90 days? Because there's often that sales lag. So it's just learning to make decisions from a wider decision window so that you
I have seen result. This year, I have seen 5 teams, including our own team, being surprised by a retrospective tax bill that was much bigger than expected. And sometimes it happens because depending on the country that you're in, there may be intransparent institutions that you're dealing with that have different delays or different way of calculating. And sometimes there is a mistake on your side, on their side. So I had 5 teams and I saw that live. One team was confronted with $80,000 more in taxes than they were expecting. Another team, $50,000. and other team 13,000. So that was the range. They didn't expect that as a monthly payment that was due immediately. Now, how did they react? Well, one of them went insolvent. They went out of business because they were not prepared. They did have only one single income stream. It was an agency, only one single income stream. Everything around that, no systems, no backups, no other ways of temporary taking the money, for example, from capital gains, from dividend gains, from somewhere else, just to survive this cash flow crunch, right? So they were put out of business, and they would still be in business just because they didn't have multiple income streams. The other teams, they are still struggling with it, but they are taking it from one side and putting it to the other. I was also surprised by a much bigger number. It was 25,000 that were, for me, coming out of nothing for 3 years ago. So there was a surprise of 25,000. And I just took it from the staking rewards from Solana. And it was easy. So I put it in 1 month from personal capital into the company, and the next month from the company back when the cash flow was there as things normalized. So it can be the same thing, right? Can break your neck, or can be just a spreadsheet exercise of 5 minutes.
Sure. No, it's very valuable. I think we're definitely painting a picture of, I think what I said before about it's not necessarily if or either or, it's when should you pivot from one to the other? And it's probably almost certainly sooner than you think. Because as you said, if what is a very dangerous number in business, and you never know when you're going to be surprised by something, whether it's a bill or an economic situation or whatever it is. So I guess the plan is just when are you going to diversify into multiple streams of income? Who do you need to speak to and how? Because it seems like it's definitely a must. It's not a should. It's a must, particularly particularly in the economic world we're moving into with AI and all these things that are both incredible opportunities but also incredible risks, depending on where you get your income from and what industry you're in and all this stuff. It's like anytime there's a revolution or there's a massive change, there's threats and there's opportunities. And so it's which side of that barrier are you positioning yourself to capitalize on? So with investing, I think a lot of that stuff's come up in terms of, both making sure that you have that good foundational wealth, but also making sure you're set up for any economic situation.
Yes, and we've learned from that. So if listeners are wondering, how did you do that spreadsheet thing, and how can I implement it in my business? I'm happy to share the spreadsheet. Just contact me on X at Simon Severino. I'm happy to share what we learned and how we changed our own cash flow management. Because basically we started now paying everything up front, even if most countries will ask you 6 months later or 12 months later to pay taxes, nobody's hindering you to paying them up front. So we have moved to a very proactive cash flow system where we pay everything to all institutions during the month, and so that there are no surprises, because those surprises can be challenging, especially for small and medium businesses. But you don't have to. You don't have to have that extra risk and volatility if you don't want to. And also in the 200K Club, in the Monday sessions, we're sharing now how to exactly build all those additional income streams. So this is also something that people can explore. It's strategysprints.com/JVC. Next week, we are talking about investing in your business versus investing in assets, which is still in this direction, but going deeper into what an asset building strategy is And if you build into the business, what is it? Is it the email list? Is it the team? What exactly would be investing in the business? Is it investing in marketing or in sales? How do you know the ROI of that? How do you take these decisions? So thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. See you next week when we go into investing in your business versus investing in assets. Bye, Alex. Have a great day. Bye, everyone.
See you guys. Bye-bye.
Avoid trying to do thousands of things that doesn't work. We have 274 templates for your business success. Reach your ambitious goals with one-on-one sprint coach. We double your revenue in 90 days.